Welcome back, everyone, to the Chaos Ball Podcast. Thanks for tapping in this week. We have another week of baseball under our belts. And the Seattle Baseball Mariners continue to play fairly uninspiring ball, if I do say so myself. But this episode, similar to last week, we're not going to focus too much on the actual baseball, and I'm not going to get too in the weeds on the Mariners and their big issues right now because it's April and we got to wait a little bit. We got to wait to see. We need the sample sizes to increase before I really rush to judgment, but the product on the field just aesthetically is not great. It's really just not, hasn't been good. But since we last recorded, what have the Mariners done? Well, not great things, you know, I'll say. They lost 2 of 3 this week at Toronto and 2 of 3 against the Brewers on this 6-game road trip. They come back home this week and face a couple NL Central teams, the Cubs and the Reds, which will be still pretty good teams, continuing the just really tough schedule to open the season, and then they'll get a 3-game set at Coors Field, which early on in the season could be a must sweep. I might declare that as a must sweep next week, but we'll see. Maybe not. I don't know. But again, uninspiring ball this week. But you know what they did do last night? They finally scored 6 runs in a game, which is huge. They hadn't done that all year. You know, real serious baseball teams do tend to score 6 or more runs from time to time, especially after you've played like, you know, double-digit games, but the Mariners said, no, we're different. And they piled on in the 10th inning of the other night's game against the Blue Jays to get the dub and prevent the sweep. And right now, the highest scoring inning for the Seattle Mariners this year has been the 10th inning. I think they have 8 runs in that inning all year, more than every other inning in their season so far, so that's cool. Completely normal baseball team, very real and normal and not unserious team for sure. But honestly, it was very similar to last week. I mean, I don't know how to other way to slice it. The offense still has been fairly uninspiring. Some guys kind of finding their footing, other guys like Julio still looking pretty awful up there. But regardless, they are 5-8, and they find themselves third in the American League West, firmly third too. The Rangers in first at 7-5. The Los Angeles Angels in second at 6-6. The Mariners at 5-8. The Oakland Athletics in fourth place at 4-8. And the Houston Astros at 4-9, which is I think about what we all expected going into the year. I think that is exactly what I predicted the division to be at the end of the year, so no notes here. And then where do the Mariners stand in terms of some depressing statistics? Well, they're second to last now. Not last in OPS anymore. They're second to last to only the Marlins, who have won, I believe, 2 games. Their team OPS is 602, which is pretty bad. The next highest team after that is the Twins with 610. And they lead the league currently in strikeout percentage at 29.2%, which is really, really funny given the emphasis on getting rid of strikeouts this offseason. Obviously, again, these numbers will probably differ greatly from the end of season numbers, but it's funny. It's almost like the strikeouts weren't really the problem with the team at all. That was the boogeyman of convincing yourself that you were improving the team when you really weren't. But, you know, what do I know? Their team pitching, looking at team like ERAs as early in the year is I don't know. It holds even less weight to me than OPS. But the Mariners team ERA is 4.84 right now. That is 8th worst in the league. Some of these numbers you can definitely take and be like, yeah, that makes sense. Like the Colorado Rockies have the worst ERA in the league by almost a point and a half. 6.57 ERA. And then teams with the best ERAs in baseball right now, the Boston Red Sox out of nowhere, the Kansas City Royals, crazy enough, the Yankees, and then like the Guardians are on here, which is not surprising. But really, where we sit with the Mariners, it's just weird vibes right now. Like the team leaders in WRC Plus for the Seattle Mariners: Dominic Canzone at 151, Dylan Moore 143, Mitch Haniger 141, Josh Rojas 136, Ty France 116, and then Luis Urias at 104. And then Cal Raleigh, J.P. Crawford, Jorge Polanco, Julio Rodriguez, Mitch Garver, and Luke Rayleigh all sit below the 100 mark by at least 18 points. Cal Raleigh at 82, J.P. at 50, Jorge Polanco at 46, Julio 44, Mitch Garver 40, Luke Rayleigh at negative 4. Luke Rayleigh hasn't played much, but just uninspiring from the top half of the lineup. It's been a bizarre start to the year. But they sit in third, and, you know, season's not over, as much as we like to say it is. And another very important stat before I get to my Mariners notes of the week: they're 3-6 with both Mitches in the starting lineup, so I will be tracking that all year because I think it's important. And it's interesting that Mitch Haniger has played so much. I didn't expect him to play this much. I think I talked in my preview, I expected more of a platoon-y situation, and so far he's been hitting and looking pretty good up there, so I think they're just rolling with who's looking good right now, and I don't necessarily dislike that. But 3-6 with both Mitches in the lineup, that's not great. The team's also 5-8, so it's kind of, you know, representative of where the team's at. And now to my Mariners notes of the week. I'm going to go over these Mariners notes, touch on each little subject, and then, you know, again, probably wrap the Mariners talk halfway through the episode, and then I'm going to talk about pitcher elbows the rest of the time, because that's what everyone seems to be talking about. And I could talk about the Shohei Ohtani stuff that came out today. Ipe stole way more money than we thought, and the text messages that are in the court records are genuinely hilarious, even though it's a pretty sad story. I don't really want to talk about that. It's just a sad story, but it happened. That's a thing. But here we go to my Mariners notes. First one: Julio looks genuinely awful at the plate right now. He really looks terrible up there. He's just striking out. He's flailing. Approaches off. Timing's off. It just looks bad. He's hitting the ball kind of hard. I mean, his hard hit rate's not great to start the year, but it's not terrible. It's not where he expects to be and where he has been for his career. And the strikeout numbers are so bad. They're worse than they have been in quite a long time. But, I mean, is he just a guy who's going to perpetually start slow? Juan Soto has always kind of been that guy. And you see this year, he has started off the year pretty hot. In year what for Juan Soto? Six? Seven? Is this year seven? Year seven. So is Julio just going to be a guy who starts slow and picks it up in the year throughout the year? I hope not. Because the whole year was kind of slow last year, apart from the 6 weeks again where he was, you know, top five player in baseball, which was awesome. But I'd really love him to, like, hit the ground running here soon. Him and Jorge Polanco and the whole top of the lineup kind of need to hit the ground running. One thing that's really interesting that is definitely worth noting is Ronald Acuna. I don't know if you've heard of Ronald Acuna, but he has yet to barrel a ball this season. And if you recall, he hit 41 home runs last year and had, I think, one of the best barrel rates in baseball, if I recall. He's looked pretty poor to start the year. Not quite as bad as Julio, because Julio's been epically bad. But Ronald Acuna has like a 630 OPS right now. He's slugging 60 points below his OBP, and there's no reason to panic. I don't think there's any reason to panic for Julio either. It's more just because it's looked so bad. It's not that he's getting unlucky. He is hitting the ball pretty hard. The issue right now is when he's hitting the ball hard, he's hitting a lot of hard ground balls, which plagued him a little bit last year too, even when he was hot. I mean, generally, if you hit ground balls hard, you will get a lot of hits more often than if you hit fly balls, but the fly balls turn into extra base hits and home runs more often, I'll go on a limb here, than ground balls do. So he's hitting the ball hard with a suboptimal launch angle, and then when he's not really... he's not really walking much, and he's just kind of, it's just non-competitive at bats. It's just, I'd like to see him at least get deeper in counts instead of riding the golden sombrero, which he did last night against the Blue Jays. And really, it's been him and the whole top of the lineup. I read those WRC plus numbers. I mean, and after, like, you know, 12 games, it's whatever, WRC plus, whatever, but it's an indicator of where the lineup's at. And Ty France is near the top of the lineup now with Mitch Haniger. But then your top three guys, JP, Julio, Jorge Polanco, and ideally Mitch Garver would be your four. That's your one through four. And Cal, I guess, is probably the fifth, one through five, if all things are cooking. All those guys are just not hitting great. Cal hit a home run again against a pivotal home run against the Blue Jays in Toronto. Stop me if you've heard that before. So he's looking whatever. He's looking fine at the plate. Jorge Polanco, ugh, awful. Really bad up there. And JP has looked worse. It's just ugly. It's the top of the lineup that needs to get on games quick, because they keep falling behind, and it's similar to last year where once they fall behind by like three runs, it just feels like it's a loss. It just feels like they're going to lose the game if they fall behind by more than two runs. And that's not what you want in the baseball team you root for. And JP needs to just set the table better. He's not walking as much as I'd like. If he's not going to hit the ball hard, he should at least walk, because that gives him his baseline. But he's not doing that very much. And what's fun, Jose Caballero, this is my next note, he hit a home run before Julio did. He had a home run the other night, and Julio has no home runs, so that's fun. And then my next couple notes are about Dom Canzone. My first one, Dom Canzone sure has been playing a lot, huh? I mean, I think the Mariners are just not forcing him to play. I think they're playing him just in the hopes of developing into above average player. I don't think there's rocket science behind it. I expected Luke Rayleigh to play a lot more, given he has a little bit more major league track record than Dominic Canzone, albeit not a whole lot, but he had a pretty solid year last year. I expected him to play more than Dominic Canzone, and to start the season, that has been the complete opposite. And Dom Canzone, my next note, he's been a really ugly watch at the plate for a lot of plate appearances this year, but he can hit the ball really damn hard. Just ugly at bats and for what seems like the whole game, and then he just unleashes 109 mile an hour double or home run in the ninth. He's hit, his home runs have all been pretty meaningless so far, which is pretty funny. Not meaningless to him, just meaningless to the team. It's that like Chris Paul hits a three to cut the lead to 45 type shit, and that's just kind of what he's been doing all year. But it's fascinating. It's even worse than Teoscar Hernandez, because the Teoscar Hernandez experience when he was coming to the Mariners, I talked about it, and it was like ugly at bat, ugly at bat, ugly at bat, ugly at bat, until he nukes a home run. And it seems like Dom Canzone is kind of following that mold, but his swing is just weirder. And what he misses, boy, does he miss. His weakness, obviously, it's no secret, is breaking balls. But honestly, long term, and even just short term this season, as he's kind of made small improvements on this already this year, I've noticed, if he can just kind of spit on the breaking balls, if he can just lay them off, even if they're in the zone, if he can recognize the sweeper, the curveball, the slider is coming, and just lay it off and just sit fastball in the zone, he can do so much damage on those. Like, I will live with a 30% strikeout rate from him, which is roughly where he's at right now, if he has a league average walk rate and just sits on fastballs in the zone and crushes them, because guys will leave them there. As much as they will know that his weakness is breaking stuff, you're still going to get fastballs, especially if you can just be patient in the count. So it's just been an interesting start to the year from him. It's been so many ugly, flaily at-bats, and then, bam, you see where the power's coming from. He hit one against the Jays the other day, and it went to the backside, basically straight away left field, and farther up than I expected it, and what the cameraman expected it. an oppo home run and it's like, oh, it's just going to scrape the wall. No, this was like 10, 15, 20 rows up in the first section. Like, the dude has crazy power. And that was his biggest strength in terms of scout grades. I think his raw power was grading out 60 plus, which is great. And you can see it. He can really hit the piss out of the ball. So, encouraging. And I will say his defense hasn't been catastrophically bad. I don't think it's been good. But I think the short sample of what I saw last year really had me freaking worried. And obviously that's a point that something he's going to work on. But him at the plate has been one of the better parts of the season this year, which also speaks to how poor the rest of the team's been. But the home runs he's hitting are fun. He leads the team in home runs with three. So that's fun. And that is, I don't know. You trade for Luke Rayleigh, and I don't know. He's just been riding the bench. Like, I can't imagine Luke Rayleigh is too happy about this. He played first base when Ty France had went on paternity. I, again, really like that that is an option, especially just from the left side of the plate, that we have a first baseman who can also play the corners. But I don't know. Maybe if it proves that Mitch just can't hit right-handed pitching, which is not a thing that has been proven at all. Mitch has been solid at the plate, but like a hyper platoon. I mean, the Poto loves a freaking platoon, like just a hyper platoon of Canzone and Rayleigh in the corners or Ty France rides the bench and Luke Rayleigh plays against right-handed pitching at first. I don't know. It's just, I was looking forward to watching more Luke Rayleigh, and he hasn't played a lot, and I think also is because he doesn't offer much. Like, Canzone and him are not very different. They don't offer that much more than the other. Luke Rayleigh, the one thing that really does differ is Luke Rayleigh's faster and can really run, where Dom Canzone is not. His top speed isn't grayed out super well. Luke Rayleigh is a legitimate, if he's playing every day, he's a legitimate threat to steal 20-plus bags. He did last season. But essentially, they're the same player. Corner outfielder, defensively, like, oh, whatever in the corner outfield. And they both strike out a decent amount. But they can both hit the ball really hard. So, again, it doesn't seem like optimal team building. I feel like I said that a lot in the offseason and the preview episode. It's not the most optimal team building. And this just seems like a wasted roster spot, but I don't think Luke Rayleigh deserves to be like sent down to AAA or anything. And with the way Canzone is playing, he deserves to stay up right now too. So when Samad Taylor was up, who we saw briefly when Ty was on paternity, he at least offered something different in that he's a right-handed hitter and he has blazing speed. So he offers something a little bit different than even Rayleigh, who's fast. Samad Taylor playing every day has 40 plus stolen base potential, and can blaze around in the outfield and be, I don't know. It's just, it feels so redundant to have Canzone and Rayleigh on the same roster when you're playing Mitch Haniger this much too in the corners, you know. I don't know. It's just interesting. But it seems like if Canzone keeps hitting the way he's hitting, I don't see where Rayleigh would get more reps unless Mitch really starts to hit a cold streak out there, or they do want to do the hyper platoon. I don't know. It just feels redundant to have both those guys on the roster, but we'll see how it plays out. Again, it's only been 12 games, what are they, 5-8? That's 13. Yeah. Next note, the Mariners pitchers have been relatively unscathed from the rash of elbow injuries we've seen in April. I'll say major injuries, I will say, because like Wu and Brash and Santos are hurt. They're all trending in the right direction, and Santos isn't even an elbow problem. Like, big time knock on wood hours there. But their stars have been fairly unscathed by this so far, which is a good thing. I noted that down. My next note, congrats to Ty France on having a kid. The guy came back, first game back from having a kid. I think he went 4-for-4. He's looking more like the Ty France we expect to see at the plate this year. It's been really nice. I will not rest on my laurels yet until the season's over. But it looks, at least it looks a little bit better than it did last year. So that's really good. My next note, it just says Tyson Miller. Tyson Miller came up because Cody Bolton, right? I think I might mix these two guys up, but Cody Bolton got hit in the kneecap. No. Cody Bolton has kidney stones, I think, and is on the IL. And Colin Snyder got hit in the kneecap with a baseball and is on the IL. So they called up two guys. One guy with a, I don't know how to say his name still. It's like a Dutch name. I'm not even going to say it. You know who I'm talking about. His stuff looked pretty nasty. It looks like a very much modern reliever that the Mariners picked up because he has crazy good stuff. Just one of those guys. And then Tyson Miller, who has bounced around the league a little bit. And I talked about a little in my preview as a potential Paul Sewald just because the release point is so similar and they pitch so similarly. And he looked really interesting in what we saw from him. I think he's going to be one of those guys who, more than just a prototypical guy who comes up and throws a 98 mile an hour sinker with a sweeper that runs a lot, he's going to offer something different. I think that's so valuable in today's game. That's why Paul Sewald works. That's why there's a lot of relievers who offer a funk. And I don't think that's ever going to die in baseball, but it's especially something that I think can thrive in baseball right now because you see this glut of guys trying to throw as hard as they possibly can, right? And you get a guy like Tyson Miller who looks like Paul Sewald, who doesn't throw very hard, but he has a funky arm angle and an arm slot, and he plays his fastball and like his sweeper slider really well. And it just comes into the batters at a weird angle. It's just the funk meter goes up when he comes in the game. And it was really fun to see him pitch. I like a funky reliever. And again, especially in today's day and age, it offers something very different. It's like why Taylor Saucedo kind of works too. He's funky. He doesn't throw super hard, but he mixes his pitches well and has that kind of sidearmy, whippy, lefty delivery. And it can work. It can work. And I think it also like protects your arm. I like can guarantee you, you know, Matt Brash is on the IL right now with elbow problems. Why? The guy throws one of the spinniest, most violent sliders in the game with high 90s fastball. Why has Paul Sewald been fairly healthy? He doesn't throw very hard and he's being funky up there. It's just different. And it preserves your arm a little bit. So I want to talk about Tyson Miller. Really interesting to see him pitch. I'm looking forward to watching more of him this year. And it just seems like they have, from the pile of relief pitchers, they have a lot of good options, which we all expected, but it's good to see it kind of playing out. My next note. This team isn't very good at hitting pitches in the middle of the plate. This came about last year. And, you know, it really pisses me off. It really does. It's one thing if they're striking out at an almost 30% clip as a team, which is bad. But if they were hammering pitches that were in the meat of the zone, I wouldn't be as mad. It was my argument last year when everyone was like, strikeouts is why this team is bad. No, strikeouts was a symptom of why of the team being bad. But again, you can strike out a lot and be a really good offensive team. You just have to hit the ball very hard when you hit it. And they're still not really doing that. They just leave pitches in the middle of the zone. I don't know what they're doing. I don't understand it. It really pisses me off. Like, I understand you can get fooled sometimes, but every time, it just do some damage on pitches in the middle of the plate. I still would like to call for an investigation on what Teoscar Hernandez said after he left the M's and said he couldn't see really hitting, so couldn't see well in Seattle hitting. I would like that investigated by the league, please, or by the Mariners at the very least, because I don't have any numbers to support this, but I feel like they miss and or don't swing at pitches in the middle of the zone more when they're playing at home. This is very hypothetical. It just feels like that to me, and I could be wrong, but it really angers me, particularly Julio. When Julio leaves a fastball middle, I want to pull my hair out, because I know he can hit that thing 115 miles an hour out of T-Mobile Park to left field. I know he can hit that ball really hard and really far. And I would almost rather Julio strike out more not swinging, but on pitches on the edge of the zone. I feel like I just need him to take a break from swinging at sweepers. And I know it's hard. I'm not a major league ball player. I see the overlays from Pitching Ninja. I understand how hard it can be when you think something's in the middle of the zone and it's not. But the man has, it's his third year, and I'm going to need him to take a break from swinging at breaking pitches and just wait for a fastball in the middle of the plate and hit the shit out of it. I just need him to do that for me, because him of all people is the one that can do the most damage on those pitches. And when he's leaving them in the middle of the plate, particularly fastballs, it angers me and really gets my goat. And yeah, my next note after this is what I just said. I forgot I even noted this down. I wouldn't care as much about the chasing if they actually did a lot of damage on pitches in the middle of the plate. I will live with chasing. If they're going to chase, they're going to chase. It's the era of chasing. Shout out to OJ Simpson. But they got to do damage on these pitches in the middle of the plate. Ty France, again, that was his big awful thing last year that I didn't think he'd be quite as bad at this year. He's definitely missed some in the middle of the plate, some that need to be deposited over the fence, but everyone has, and I'm going to need to, they need to do more damage on these pitches. That's like the minimum that they need to do. Doing, you know, getting hits on pitches in the shadow and laying off close pitches, that's impressive and very nice if you can do that. But at the core of what you should be doing as a hitter is destroying pitches that are in the middle of the plate. That is where you should get the most of your runs from, and where most hitters do at some point. But it's been a tough slog these first couple weeks watching them try to hit pitches in the middle of the plate. And that's it for my Mariners notes. Really, it's just, again, more of the same from last season and from last week. Again, April matters statistically. The stats matter. The results don't matter as much, but it's just the fact that they're doing it again really pisses me off. It's like April matters, but it doesn't. You know, like, it doesn't matter if you really struggle in April, because you can make adjustments as an individual. You can make adjustments and you can really hit the ground running in May, and like your end of season numbers won't be too affected if you had a poor month of April and then good months after that. But if they keep losing games, they're going to have to dig themselves out of the hole again. This is what failed them last season. They got really hot and fell short. They followed their almost the exact same mold as the season prior, and they barely squeaked into the playoffs the season prior in 2022. And 2023, they didn't do enough. And it's because they've fucked around, hovering two games below or above 500 until the like late July, and then went on that run again. And I don't want it to happen. The runs in August and September of being the hottest team in baseball and like climbing the standings, it's fun. I will say, it's fun, but I would rather they not have to do that. Because imagine if they were in like a wild card position or winning the division and then went on a hot streak. Imagine that. Now that would be crazy. That is heresy, I know. That would be a wild concept to do that. So April matters and doesn't matter. If they're just going to dig themselves a hole and start this slow again, it's just going to be a tough, long season. I think it's going to be anyway. It's just so suboptimal. But I'm done. I'm done talking about the Mariners. Now we're going to talk about pitchers' elbows and how they're exploding left and right in April and why it's absolutely 100% the pitch clock. No, I'm just kidding. But this is, everyone's talking about this, and I'll talk about it. I've been texting my brothers about it. If y'all are listening, hello. Texting back and forth about ideas. How do we fix this? What's the problem? And the problem is that it's 100 problems at once, and there's not a clear solution. Like, the solution is emblematic of the problem itself, where I think the solution is doing a lot of different things. Like, the problem is a lot of different things causing these injuries. I swear a new pitcher has an elbow problem every day. I am scared to look at like Jeff Passan tweets now. I'm scared to load up Twitter and see baseball news. And when I see a pitcher's name, like I saw Tyler Glasnow trending the other night after not watching any baseball. It's because he struck out 14 guys because he looks awesome this year. But I saw his name trending and I was like, oh God, not Tyler Glasnow again. He's hurt again? No, he's not. But it just scares me. Every time I see a pitcher trending, I get so frightened. It just feels like, so I'll get into why it's not as big of an issue as we think compared to like what it's been the past decade. And the numbers do support that it's fairly on trend for the month of April for these injuries. It just feels like it's bigger names than ever this year. It feels like every pitcher that goes down hurt has been a pretty significant pitcher in the league. Like Gerrit Cole to start the year. Now Spencer Strider, who doesn't seem like he needs Tommy John, but has a UCL problem that, I mean, at some point in his career, he's going to have to get elbow surgery for sure, whether it's Tommy John or internal brace. But he's hurt. Framber is hurt. Shane Bieber, Tommy John, out for the year. He started off the year, his stuff, his velocity. He went to Driveline in the offseason. His velocity was up. His stuff looked great. He looked phenomenal. Tommy John. Nick Pivetta. Yuri Perez, the 20-year-old phenom who the Marlins were so careful with this guy because they saw how special he could be. They limited his innings last year. They sent him down to AAA. He pitched so well, but they were so committed to limiting his innings and his workload. They sent him down to AAA just to sit there and not even pitch for a little while and then called him back up late in the year. He's Tommy John, out for the year. Again, Matt Brash, not out for the year, but elbow problem. Felix Bautista, out for the year. Sandy Alcantara, out for the year. Lucas Giolito, out for the year. Josiah Gray, out for the year. Jeffrey Springs, Drew Rasmussen, Anthony Desclafani. So many more. All out. All out for an extended period of time with UCL damage. And I think a lot of people are throwing around solutions and causes. Twitter will tell you, if you go into the comment, if Jeff Passan tweets another injury, you'll go to the comments of that Twitter post and get through all of the bots first, and then you'll see like, oh, it's pitch clock, pitch clock, pitch clock, pitch clock, ruined baseball. I don't think it's 100% the pitch clock, but it may be like 1% the pitch clock. I think the mystery here is in the solution. I don't think there's a clear solution to this. But I don't think there's much mystery in the causation. And I have a list here of all the things that I think are causing this. And it's like 10, 15 different things. All the factors why, like small or large, it doesn't matter. Like why every reason guys might be getting hurt more and more. And again, it's been like this for like a decade. The real big shift started, I want to say like 2011, 2012, and then it really ramped up in like 2014, 2015, and it's been bad since of pitcher injuries. And I think these are the three biggest, I guess. Two of them go hand in hand. These are the three biggest factors. And it's, again, it's not rocket science. Like a lot of things, sometimes the obvious thing is the most likely reason to be causing these. Throwing a baseball like this is just awful for your elbow, no matter the velocity. Like, humans are meant to throw things, but like not like this. This is completely unnatural. It's terrible for your elbow. And you don't even need to throw that hard. You just need to throw enough for it to kill your elbow and your UCL. I think that's the biggest reason, obviously. And then emphasis recently on maximizing velocity and spin, and how we've tied like financial gain in the sport to maximum velocity and spin. I think those two things, the throwing a baseball is terrible for your arm in general, and then the increased emphasis on throwing as hard as you can, spinning the ball as much as you can, and getting as much movement as you can to be nasty. Those are the two biggest reasons in my mind. And it's my problem with the emphasis on velocity and spin is like, yes, it's very advantageous to throw harder, because generally if you throw harder, you get guys out more. It's just, I think we have lost sight somewhat of the art of pitching you know, like, not to be kind of a boomer here, it's kind of a boomery take, but sometimes it's the maximizing velocity and spin. I think guys should try to throw harder to get guys out more. I think that's generally a good thing, but I think, like, trying to be like, I want to throw as hard as I possibly can, maybe just scale it back in an effort for health. But unfortunately, I think the financial aspect of trying to throw as hard as it's snowballed into, like, the financial aspect goes all the way to, like, middle school and getting into showcases and high school and getting into, like, colleges. And that all leads to, you know, a higher, like, getting higher velocity in high school will lead to you getting either drafted higher with a higher signing bonus or getting to a better school where they can develop your pitching better and make you throw harder so that you can get a higher signing bonus when you get drafted out of that school. The financial ties are no joke to like velocity and spin at this point. And though these are the two things that I think are the most causing the most issues, but then other things that I think cause issues, the month of April. The month of April generally is when most pitchers get hurt. They ramp up in the off season and spring training. They go full force in April when it's cold out, and they haven't, you know, they haven't been putting 100% max effort into spring training. Maybe some guys are, but April, there's just more injuries like this. So the month of April, that's definitely a cause here. And by like May, June, July, we'll likely be seeing less of these injuries. But we'll see. We'll see this year. And then the next one is pitch clock. I'm very skeptical that this is significantly causing damage. It's been a decade plus of pitchers getting hurt more and more, like I've said, like long before even the minor league pitch clock. This has been a problem. So I don't think it's not a problem. I think it might be a very small aspect of the problem, but people will be like, the pitch clock, it was implemented last season and now all these pitchers are hurt, it's the pitch clock. It's not. And there's a really good tweet from Travis Sochik that he explored pitcher injuries and when reported Tommy John surgeries have, how many reported Tommy John surgeries there are for pitchers during the first 100 days of the MLB calendar. And he basically, he says, I'm going to read his tweet verbatim. He said, quote, "There's no Tommy John surge this spring. It's just always this bad since around 2014. Today marks the 100th day of the year, and this was April 10th. Today makes the 100th day of the year, a period during when most elbow injuries occur. We looked at the first 100 days of each year, Tommy John surgery procedures for MLB and all pro pitchers since Tommy John first went under the knife, and that was 2000. And this year there have been 9. Last year there were 3. 2022 there were. Oh, wait. Hold on. Yeah, in MLB. There were 16 pro, so I think that's like, you know, minor league and stuff. 16 Tommy Johns so far this spring, 23 last year by the 100th day, 2022, 28. 2021, 47, and the list goes on and on. And you'll see if you look at this tweet and the graph, again, this spring has not been abnormal. So we can conclude that for sure. So long story short, I don't think the pitch clock is the thing causing these injuries. I understand why people would go there because you have less time to recover after throwing really hard. And I'm interested to see if there is an aspect or an impact on injuries, because there might be. I don't discount that theory. I just don't think it's the main cause. I do think MLB shouldn't have increased it again after last season. I think they, decreased the time in between pitches, I should say. I think by like 2 seconds going into this season, I think they should have had more research done before doing that of how the pitch clock was affecting guys at the major league level, because you can study the effects on like what it's done to the minor leagues since they've implemented it a few years ago, but the minor leagues are different than the major leagues. I mean, surprise, surprise, like guys are throwing harder and with more spin and stuff in the major leagues. So them just increasing it, seeing it helped baseball, and then just automatically being like, okay, let's decrease it. Let's make it 2 seconds faster. I think they should have given it a few years to do some significant studies before really increasing it or ramping it up again. So, but even then, a 2 second increase from last season to this season, I don't think would significantly cause more injuries. So really, I think pitch clock could be related, but I don't think it's like, I don't think it's significant. Another thing that could be causing these, the off season, guys, off seasons, are just different than they ever have been. I think guys are throwing a lot more, like pitching a lot more in the off season than they did before. Like the off season hits and some guys are going to the Dominican to play winter ball, and going into a pitching lab, like going to Driveline to increase their velocity and throwing max effort all off season. I think that is probably definitely a big part of this too. Another one, I think this is where a big solution lies in youth development. As I said, the emphasis on velocity and spin, should not be like emphasized this much at a young age. I don't think even before college, even in high school, I don't think guys should be trying to throw as hard as they can. I think they should be working on their pitches and like thinking about pitching, but not blowing their arm out. And I think youth development is where a solution could lie. I think youth development is where, honestly, most of these problems begin. I think this could be the biggest factor of all, is throwing hard at a young age. So I don't know how MLB would help this, but I think culturally in baseball, I think there just needs to be a shift from teaching your kid. Like there was always that. I remember my dad telling me I couldn't throw a curveball before I was like 13 because it ruined my elbow. And it turns out it's not that much worse for your elbow. It's more trying to throw a fastball as hard as you possibly can when you're that young anyway. That is really bad for your elbow. I think there just needs to be a cultural shift in how we look at young pitchers and how we develop them. I think that's where one of the big solutions can lie. Another thing, like I kind of mentioned pitching labs, like what, Verlander just talked about this at length, which is really good, basically changing mechanics to throw harder and get more spin and movement. And he talked about like some guys, just the way they throw the ball naturally and the way their body is, they're not going to get elite velocity, but if you go to like tread or Driveline, they can tweak it. So you might be throwing it a little bit more unnaturally, but you get more velocity. And I think that's kind of a problem. I think we should find where guys' limit is and they shouldn't try to go above that. They should just be able to try to work with what they've got. And you can do so much with that. Again, like you can work on command and like tunneling and pitch and just your pitch mix and how you throw a whole game. And how you work on pitch design. I think all that could be super important to how good a pitcher is. But just changing these mechanics, and like Verlander was talking about these pitching labs, and it's like, pitching labs are cool. They make guys throw harder and throw nasty pitches, but they might be causing some of these problems because you're changing what might be a natural mechanic for some of these pitchers and being like, no, you should do this to throw harder, and that is probably worse for their arm. This next one, sticky stuff and pitchers having to grip the ball harder to spin it like they used to. Pitchers have talked about this, and not even like just using spider tack, but like rosin and sweat, sunscreen and sweat. Guys can't do that anymore. So you have to grip the ball harder when you're throwing like a sweeper, and that puts more stress on your elbow. I think that's part of the problem. I think there could definitely be a link to the ban of sticky stuff and more injuries. I think that's definitely something to study, and people are studying that. I wrote down sweepers as one of the problems. Sweepers. Yeah, sweepers. I mean, just emphasis on throwing these crazy moving pitches, I think it's not great for your elbow. The next one I have on here is second to last one, the AAU basketball problem, which I'm a big proponent of, where kids are specializing in their sport younger and younger. And I think that is a bad decision. I think that's a very bad decision. You look at it, and it's in the context of basketball, just because you see, I don't know, I've seen this more in the context of AAU basketball, guys playing AAU when they're 12 years old. But it's like Perfect Game and stuff for baseball, too. These kids are, if you realize you have real talent, you're playing baseball year-round. You're not playing other sports. And I think it's really good for you to play other sports. There's studies that that support this, that playing other sports are really good for your body. I mean, look at some of the best athletes of all time. Like, look at LeBron. He played played football in high school. Like, Kobe Bryant, too. He was really healthy until the very end of his career. He played soccer all the time growing up. a lot of guys who are super healthy play other sports in the off season just to strengthen different parts of their body. I think the specialization at a young age is a problem. That's definitely an issue. It goes hand in hand with the development thing. I think that's part of it. And then the last thing I wrote is just genetics. You know, at the end of the day, sometimes your genetics are just going to be worse than some other people's. And that's an issue. And that's, it's not a broad issue of why these injuries are happening, but it's like, I feel like we forget that some guys can just throw really hard and not really get hurt. And some guys can just keep getting hurt. And I think lumping all the injuries into one bucket is not a great way to look at it, because sometimes even if a guy is trying to throw as hard as he can, he's going to get hurt more than the next guy because of genetics. It just happens. So I don't know how they fix this. Those are all my problems that could be like contributing to this. I don't know how they fix it. I have no clue. I think it has to kind of start with development. But again, I don't know what MLB can actually enforce developmentally. They don't have reach into what high schools are doing, like high school coaches and stuff. I think it has to start culturally with development. I think an interesting idea, this one's funny, actually. Let me say this one first. Speed limit. No throwing above 97. So sorry about it, pitchers. Over 97, it's a ball. Bang. There you go. Arms are fixed. No. What about shrinking the strike zone? Guys have to focus more on command and less on velocity. But I poked holes. This is my idea. I poked holes in this immediately, because this would just lead to more walks. And that's not really fun. I think we want lower strikeout rates and more balls in play, not more walks necessarily for excitement. This one's interesting that I texted my brothers about that. We kind of agree this one could be interesting. Is you move the mound back a little bit. And what that would do is obviously reduce velocity to the batter and like movement a little bit and spin. But you legalize sticky stuff again. So, I don't know. You let guys, they don't have to grip the ball as hard. And you move the mound back, so it's the perceived velocity is less. I don't know. I don't know if that'd help elbows. I don't know. It's just full-blown softball. No overhand throwing anymore in the men's sport. You got to throw it like a softball pitcher. Sorry. Another idea. Someone had this idea I can't remember. But it's like you lose your DH for the rest of the game if your starter doesn't go, I think it's 5 or 6 innings or something. This is interesting, but I don't know. I don't think it's a great solution. Cause let's say like, if you have this strategy, pitchers don't get pulled before the 6th inning because of too many pitches exclusively. Sometimes your guy goes out there and gets absolutely rocked in the first inning and he's given up 8 runs and you have to pull him. So you lose your DH for the rest of the game because your pitcher sucked. Like, how is that helping pitchers' elbows? That's just punishing a team for being bad. And then also this, wouldn't it also kind of encourage the opposite? Like, if you were forcing, if you're a team who really relies on your DH, and you have to have your pitcher go 6 innings, what if your starter's out there in the 5th with like 110 pitches and you can't lose your DH this game? It's a pivotal game. And you might just leave your starter out there. And what if he ends up throwing like 140 pitches to get through to the 6th inning so you don't lose your DH and ends up getting hurt because of that? It just feels a little counterintuitive. And then, I don't know, less pitchers on the roster is a solution that was thrown out here, like reduce the amount of pitchers allowed so that teams are forced to try and like emphasize going deeper into games and getting the most out of their starters' innings. I don't know. I don't know. The solutions, I think they're less easily identifiable than the causes here. And that's my take on the matter, and that is where I'm going to end the episode. One more random thought before we go. If the Mariners were a serious baseball team, they'd trade for Mike Trout. There, I said it, but they're not serious. And that's never going to happen. But I appreciate you listening if you did all the way through. Much appreciated. Thank you so much. I will be back next week. Hopefully the Mariners play some better ball, but I will leave you at that. Hope you have a good rest of your week, and go Mariners against the NL Central at home this week. Come on. Let's beat up on the Midwest. All right, let's do it. Go Mariners.